I'm an addict. My name is John.
Hey, John.
Man, I'm grateful to be alive and clean, grateful to be in Corbin, Kentucky. Like, if you'd have told me when I first got clean that I'd be sharing at a convention with a view like that, you know, in Corbin, Kentucky, I would have, like, thought that shit was impossible. Because I remember when I first got here, my life was so hopeless, and I was so helpless, and total desperation had taken over my life, and, like, I never thought I would be clean. Because I used from the age of the time I was 15 to the time I was 39, like, I destroyed everything I ever touched. And when I got here, they told me that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. The message is hope and a promise of freedom. You know, freedom from active addiction. You know, and then I get the topic, one promise. And I'm like, man, if you'd have told me any promises when I first got here, I'd have been like, you're full of shit. You're lying to me. You know, but I know for a fact that, because I got concrete evidence in my life, that one promise is true. But I got to do some work to get it and to make it happen and to make it stay happening. You know, and I looked up some stuff because I'm a literature guy, you know, and I like going to the literature. And it says Narcotics Anonymous offers only one promise, and that is freedom from active addiction. The solution that eluded us for so long, we will be free from our self-made prisons. Living just for today, we have no way of knowing what will happen to us. We are often amazed at how things work out for us. We are recovering in the here and now, and the future becomes an exciting journey. If we had written down a list of expectations when we came to the program, we would have been cheating ourselves. Hopeless living problems have become joyously changed. Our disease has been arrested, and now anything is possible. But that happens through working the steps for me. Because when I got here, I had a, I dropped out of school when I was 15. My dad, I'm adopted. I was raised by my grandparents. Page 3 says that many of us believe that the disease was in us long before we started using drugs, because when I first got to the program, I didn't know nothing about the disease of addiction. I thought I had a drug problem. Matter of fact, I come from a small town, like 3,500 people. So everybody, like, that was giving me information, give me what they had, but I didn't know shit about the disease of addiction until, like, 2.5 years in. But if I would listen to the readings when they first, like, who's an addict, what is the NA program, why am I here, how it works, I would learn about the disease of addiction. But I was like, oh, that's just some stupid shit they do every time. You know, I come to the meeting. Little did I know, like, that's one of the most powerful and purest messages I'm going to hear. You know, so I'm 15 years old, and I drop out of school. I have a kid. I got 4 kids by the time I was 22 years old. And, like, man, when my grandpa molested my friend, and I had to go back to school, like, I couldn't do it. So I just quit going to school. I started using drugs with people who were twice my age, running like I was a grown-ass man. I was still just a little boy, you know. But that one promise, you know, when I got here, like, it says, have faith in someone who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Like, I started getting involved because I'm going to quote a lot of literature. It also says that those who get the our only hope is to live by the examples of those who have faced their dilemma and found a way out. So I had to start, like, getting in the back pockets of people who were doing the program. Because that when I went to my first meeting, there was a dude that I was in the gutter with. And like, he was shining. The light was on in his eye. He had gotten his kids back. He had gotten a job and sustained it. Like, he was vibrant. And if I knew if he could do it, I could do it. You know what I'm saying? But, like, just because there's one promise, that don't mean none of that shit's going to happen for me. Even if I do put in the work, some of us still don't gain the material shit that other people do. But like, freedom for active addiction was enough for me when I first got here. You know, I had this little, I had a really hard time finding a job because I was, like, been to prison twice. I got multiple felonies. I got explosive weapons on my charges and manufacturing. So nobody wanted to give me a shot in a little town that I was from. But, like, I just kept plugging away. Because the last time, let me back up a second, I get excited. The last time I went to prison, It was September 12, 2015 is the last day I used. I've been clean for 9 years, 5 months, and like 24 days.
That's right.
And you're talking about a dude who couldn't stop using for less than, you know, an hour. You know, my body had to shut down for me to stop. You know, but when I got charges, they arrested me. I was working on a dirt bike. I had no water. I was no electricity. I was living in a trailer with this girl that was liable to kick me out at any given time. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was working on that moped. And I got done. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go down to this gas station or this pop machine down at this housing project. Give me a pop. I seen this cop, but I didn't really think nothing about it. And the way my guy works is like, he pulled up on me and arrested me for a seatbelt ticket, a $10 ticket that I didn't go to court for. Found 2 ounces of weed and like 2 A-balls, and like the pressure was lifted off of my shoulder when he put them handcuffs on me. I no longer had to use against my will, because I had been using. I did not want to use, you know, for like 6 months. I wasn't getting high using, you know. So they put me in drug, or I go to prison. Here's the hitter. Like, I always wanted to be a dad. The literature says that we use the drugs, but the drugs use us more. And when I went to breakfast at 6:30 in the morning at diagnostics, I sit across the table from my oldest son and his childhood best friend, who pretty much grew up in my house. And they're over there laughing and shit. I'm like, this shit ain't fucking funny. Like, how did I get here? Like, it talks about when all the lies, all the illusions, all the rationalizations fall away, and I come face to face with what my life had become. In that moment, I came face to face with how hopeless and meaningless and how long life had been passing me by without my participation in it. And most importantly, like, the way it affected me having to sit there with my son. Like, my son was in prison not because I made him use drugs, but because I showed him that lifestyle his whole life. Because even though here's the thing about Narcotics Anonymous, it'll keep you clean. Like, in 2000, when I got the explosive weapons charges and the manufacturing, I come to NA for 3 years. I worked steps. I was on step 9. But when I graduated, and I had a reservation that once, I used to tell sponsor people and tell them, do what you got to do until you can do what you want to do. Because I didn't know no different. But them steps are meaningless unless I learn how to live them. I didn't apply no spiritual principles. So, like, I went right back out. Sponsor tried calling me. I ain't got nothing to say to you, dude, you know? Like, everything I did was superficial. Like, it didn't mean shit. So when I got out this time and they put me in drug court and I started going to NA, like, I started driving these Amish people, because the only dude that would give me a chance was this little short dude. He was a dwarf. You know, and he's a Mennonite. And he said, no, I won't give you a job. But when I went there and I told him my story, for the first time I was honest about what the hell was going on in my life. And it's, by the time I left, he's like, yeah, you can have a job. You can start driving Amish. So the funny thing is they sent me to London, Kentucky. Middle of winter, snowstorm. And I called Rodney B, because I was tied in with Rodney. And he was like, call Chris M. So I called Chris. Next thing you know, I'm in a truck with Billy, with Chris, some dude from AA, Willie P. Hey, and we went to a meeting an hour and a half away. You know, little did I know God was lining me up for this moment right here, because Chris called me. He's like, hey, I told him you were a chair. Like, he didn't really even ask me, you know. So, but he knows I'm willing. Man, because this program saved my life. The one promise from freedom from active addiction has allowed me to be a 15-year-old dropout like that dude was talking about last night. Went and got his GED. You know, I went and got my GED the first time I got out before the drugs took back a hold. You know, and then I went to a convention in Fort Smith, Arkansas. My man Tony M. from Houston, Texas, was talking about how he was about my age, a little older, about how he went back to school just a little, like a few years before that. He's getting ready to graduate with his master's. You know, and there was like 300 people, man. I felt like he was talking to me. Like, he... Because another thing about how God works is, like, I borrow money to go to this convention, $140 from my boss. I go down there, I buy these raffle tickets. They got this little thing of money. you know, and then they had the 50-50. But they draw three tickets for this little thing of money. Nobody picked it up. So the fourth ticket was mine. Guess how much was in it? $140 to get back to my boss. Like, that's fucking powerful, man. But like Tony told me, I could go to college. But when I went back, I got enrolled in North Central. Boom, 2 years. Didn't do very good because it was my gen eds. But I did good enough to pass. And then I moved from where I'd always lived because I got clean where I fucked up at. Where I was like third county's third most wanted. I got clean there. You know, so I moved. And here's the thing about where it talks about how it says when the drugs go and the addict works the program, wonderful things happen. Lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise. Our willingness to grow spiritually is what keeps us buoyant. Like, I went up there, man, I made the president's list twice. You're talking about a dude who couldn't get C's in high school, you know? And like, I come this close from graduating. I was like 0.02% from graduating with honors. But you know what? I graduated, and my family was there. Narcotics Anonymous was there. I have a master's degree in social work. And you're talking about meaningless, hopeless, spiritually bankrupt, dead. All from that one promise. You know, and I work steps. I stay working steps because I believe the steps, it says the steps are a solution. They're a survival kit. They're our best defense against a disease, which is deadly in nature. Then it also says working the steps is the best insurance against relapse. And I don't want to fucking relapse because I don't want to die. I don't want to die spiritually because the way the disease will probably mess with me, if like he'll probably just strip me and just kill me spiritually and then let me suffer because it's a bad motherfucker for real. But like when I was when I worked steps, it's like I'm clearing the wreckage of my past. Like, I sort through the confusion. I build a foundation. I sort through the confusion and contradiction. Here's another powerful piece for people who don't believe in God, you know, because I had a hard time with it when I got here. You know, like, when there's a thing called the symbol, and it tells you in the last paragraph, it said the symbols read self, society, service, and God, counterclockwise. Like, God will allow himself to be last in the beginning, because my man talked about going from selfish to selfless. Like, God will allow himself to be last in the beginning. By the time I get to the fifth step, it says I admit it to God, to myself, and another human being. He's first by the time I get there, and I don't even realize how that shit happened. I just work the steps. I don't know how it works for it to work. I just got to follow a simple direction, you know? And so, like, when I get to my ninth step, and I make amends, you know, it says, as a result of working, he told me not to say this, but the ninth step, we are free to live in the present, able to enjoy each moment and experience gratitude for the gift of recovery. Memories of the past no longer hold us back, and new possibilities appear. We are free to go in directions we never considered before. We are free to dream and pursue the fulfillment of our dreams. We live, our lives stretch out like a limitless horizon. We may stumble from time to time, but in the steps gives us the opportunity to pick ourselves up, keep walking forward. Our higher power has given us an invitation to live, and we accept it with gratitude. We don't just accept it. We gratefully accept it. You know, because like when I think about the ninth step, and I think about like, what my life looks like at that moment, and how what my life looks like because of the one promise. It's like I got a really good view of what's going on. But if I don't finish the steps, I won't get the full picture. You know, and my man was talking yesterday, and he's like, just think of it like this. He's like, you got an old shitty barn. Everything looks good, but you got this old shitty barn. He said, just imagine once you tear that barn down, what that view looks like. Then it becomes into full view. Like the beauty of my life, once I've worked the rest of the steps, like takes that shit out. And I can see clearly, like, what my life is going to become like. Because, like, I believe God speaks to me through you guys, you know? And so, like, when I get that view and I start maintaining in step 10, I start checking my spiritual temperature and doing the daily maintenance. And then I get a better relationship with my higher power through prayer and meditation. And then I get that message, or that spiritual awakening, which gives me my message. Because there's the message, then there's my message from working the 12 steps. You know, and like I get to carry my message now. I have a responsibility, is what my sponsor told me. You have a responsibility now that you've worked this 12 step to go back in the pits of hell and help people find their way out. To walk people through the 12 steps and help them find the freedom that you found from that one promise. To give them what you got. Because I can't keep what I have unless I give it away. You know, and like that shit was powerful to me. Never did I thought, because in the 12 step it'll talk about like being used as a tool or a spiritual instrument. Never did I sign up for God to use me to be a tool to help somebody. I didn't know that shit was going to transform it like that. Because, one, I wasn't willing, you know, because I didn't believe I could help myself in the beginning, let alone help somebody else. But, like, through working the steps and finding out who John really is, like, I help people today. I went from selfish to selfless. I went from being a coward to practicing courage. Like, because, like, fear used to cripple me. If I thought I was going to be embarrassed, or I thought I was going to not be able to do something the way that I think you think I'm going to should be able to do it, I wouldn't even fucking try. So, like, when I went to school, that was a big deal for me because I didn't know if I could succeed. But I know the principals of Narcotics Anonymous told me if I didn't try, I would never know. But they told me if I practice courage and integrity and self-discipline and I just apply what I use this shit, because like that lady was talking about, she used wrote papers on spiritual principles. I did too. But I'd also skip school to go to NA conventions. Because this is my top priority. I don't know about nobody else, but if I don't put, I'll put Narcotics Anonymous first so I can keep everything else I got. Because like Narcotics Anonymous and then it says it. It says in our literature that I must learn how to adapt my life to the program, not the program to my life. And like that was a powerful hit for me because I was so selfish and self-obsessed that the last thing I wanted to do was put anything before me. Little did I know that the transformation is a demonstration that the information is taking root. Like something has happened during that to where like I don't put myself first no more. Like I think of myself less. So I can think of somebody else and help them. Because like the one promise, when it says I accept it gratefully, that tells me that I got to help somebody. So I continue. I brought my man. He got 90 days clean.
Yeah.
You know, hey, he displays a level of willingness that I only wish I did in the beginning. Like he does everything I ask him to and don't question it. Don't no questions. Because in my sponsorship tree, like each of us do it differently, but we all got the same approach. Like we started the symbol and we go through all the literature until we get to the first step. Because the first question in the first step of the step working guides is what does the disease of addiction mean to me? And I just told you I didn't know what the disease of addiction was for like the first 2.5-3 years, and I worked around the steps. So that means, I mean, like, I can find relief from it, but, like, if I don't know my enemy, which is in me, like, how am I going to effectively answer questions? How am I going to answer that question to best benefit me? So, like, we do a lot of grinding before we even get to step work, but it's all part of step work, you know, and he's did everything I've asked him to. Right now, tomorrow he will have read what is in a program 7 days in a row, and we'll go over it on the way home. Because we got plenty of time. It's going to be like a 12-hour trip. So, but like that ain't shit. Like we do this thing. We love this shit. I love Narcotics Anonymous with my whole heart. Because it's given me, it also says in the first step of the step working guides about how our relationships were a parody, a sham of love and intimacy. My man from New Jersey says parody and sham. When he looked that up, says, our relationships were a feeble, ridiculous imitation of love and intimacy. Today, man, I got brothers here. Like when I come here, I knew that people was going to support me. People that love me for just me being me. I don't have to be somebody else no more. I don't have to bring the representative. I get to participate in my life. You know, I get to love you for who you are, and you love me for who I am. Because that's the most powerful spiritual principle we got, is unconditional love. You know, and one of the things about when I clear all that shit out, I always like to go here because it's a powerful hit. Because, like, that one promise don't mean I'm going to get all that shit, but it don't mean I'm not. So I always read this, and it says, we see, Levenstep, we see, regardless of presence or absence of material success in our lives, we can be content. We can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without the approval of others. We've begun to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. Our most heartfelt longings and dreams for our lives are coming true. These priceless gifts are priceless, are no longer beyond our reach. They are, in fact, the very essence of God's will for us. In our gratitude, we go beyond merely asking for the power to live up to God's plan for our own lives. We begin to seek out ways to be of service, to make a difference in the life of another addict, to carry the message of recovery. Our spiritual awakening has opened us up to spiritual contentment, unconditional love, and personal freedom, knowing that we can only keep this precious gift if by sharing it with others. We move on to step 12, is what the last sentence says. So, like, I don't hesitate, if somebody calls me, and if I don't have nothing going on, like, I'm coming. You ain't got to give me gas money. You ain't got to pay for my room. Like, I'm coming. Because I know how important this is. That one promise has revolutionized my existence. You know, and so, like, what kind of NA member would I be if I didn't give it back? What kind of NA member would I be if my man says, hey, because I planned on coming here solo. I didn't plan on bringing nobody. You know, and a week ago, he's like, can I go with you? I was like, well, let me call and see if we got room. He's a couple days later, did you call? So I called right then. And Riley's like, you already know the answer. Bring him. So I brought him. Come find out we got our own room. There's plenty of room. You know, he's gotten how many people? You got 7 people's phone numbers. Like, he's met the people who are very important to my life and will soon probably be important to his life, because they're going to meet up at the same spots a lot of different times. You know, and like, I can't keep this shit if I don't give it away. No, not only that, I want to give it away. I want to help somebody, because I remember September the 12th of 2015. I remember the way I felt, and I will never, I will do my best not to forget that pain, because the disease of addiction is a bad motherfucker. Yeah, that's right. And it will lull me to sleep if I don't pay attention. You know, but, like, one more thing. I'll throw this in there, and I'll leave it at that, because this is a powerful hit. It's on page 79, last sentence, the first paragraph. It says, we have never seen an addict who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. That's a bold fucking statement. But you got, if you look around, you got people in here who are living, breathing examples of that shit. Like, it's no longer a theory. It's a reality. Motherfucking addicts stay clean, and we do recover from the disease. Well, yeah, we do recover from this. We're not recovered, but we recover from the disease of addiction to live happy, prosperous lives. Do we all end up... I've been clean over 9 years. I live with one of my sponsees. I got a car. I got some clothes. But I don't have much other than that. I just graduated college. That's fucking expensive. You know? And, but, like, I don't even care. That's just going to come to me when it's the right season, when God wants me to have it. You know, I just started working at the treatment center with inpatient treatments or clients. Like, I'm the inpatient counselor. Who the ever fucking, I've been to 4 treatment centers. I never thought I'd be fucking helping people at a treatment center. The beautiful gift is like, if you really study this shit and, you know, like, you make it a part of who you really are, you can give them this message without them knowing that you're giving them Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and like, they're like, wow, that's powerful. I'm like, yeah, Go to the meeting when you get out, bro. You know, give yourself a chance. Because I also know that I went every treatment center I went to, I was high before I got home. So I give them hard truths, and I give them hope messages, and I just try to like get back in NA and out of NA because I can help somebody. My man says try to do something good for somebody and don't get caught for it. You know, don't expect a pat on the back. Don't look for a thank you. Like, do something good for somebody just because it's the right fucking thing to do. So I try to do that on a daily basis. And I try to not get caught. You know, and like, that shit's powerful. That helps me way more than it helps them. They don't even know I'm doing it. You know what I mean? And even if they do, I don't accept nothing. I don't look for the thank you. Because one of my big deals is, I seen this thing on Facebook, and this dude held this door open. This girl go walking in, she didn't say shit. He's like, you open the door yourself. That's it. I'm like, man, nobody says thank you when I open the door for them, I'm like, all right. Have a nice day. I don't say shit to them. I just go on. But I want to snatch them up sometimes and be like, open the fucking door for yourself, you ungrateful bastard. But by living by principles, like, I'm on a seventh step, and I got to start, like, I'm on the question that said, have you called and asked any other members for their experience, strength, and hope on how they have asked God to remove their shortcomings? So I started making phone calls. I got information, valuable information, that even with people with 19 or 20 years clean, it's still going to struggle with that part. But if they keep putting the program first, like, it's going to get better. And I'm really grateful to be alive and clean. Like, if you don't have nobody believes in you, man, just stick around and have faith and find somebody who does. Because there's people here who will help you. And with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
So our second speaker speaking on the topic of One Promise, Many Gifts is Terry.
Yeah.
I'm Terry. I'm an addict. One Promise, freedom from active addiction. Had to find out what active addiction meant. Because when I worked the first question on the first step, what does this ease of addiction mean to you? I said, having fun. You know, and I had to learn a lot. You know, when they said I had to read the basic text, I got up and I was ready to leave. Because when I came here, I didn't have a problem. I started using drugs at the age of 8, and I got here at the age of 50. I came because my wife had a problem. The first person I met in the parking lot, when he got about here to the door from me, I rolled a crack in my window, I cursed him out, I said, get the fuck away from my truck. I said, y'all need to go in there, talk to her, she got a problem. You know, and they laughed and told me, keep coming back, and I'm grateful for that, because my first 2 months coming to meetings, I came high. I didn't have a problem, I had a habit. You know, they said, read the basic text. I didn't know how to read. I was ready to leave, and I had to work steps. I don't know how to read. My first set of steps, my wife read them for me, for me to work them. And she stayed in the program long enough for me to learn how to read. I'm still not good at it, but I can comprehend what I'm saying. You know, when I could comprehend what I'm saying, she went back to do what we do. She's running right now from the law from an 18-year sentence for doing what we do. You know, and I'm grateful for the program because I didn't like me when I got here. And I didn't like nobody else. Somebody had told me I was racist, and really fucked me up because I thought I hated everybody equal. Because I hated me, you know. I how the fuck am I like you and I hate me? You know, to where I had to learn a lot about me before I could start learning about the disease of addiction. Because I have 13 years, 5 months, and a couple of days clean. That's the longest I've ever been clean my whole fucking life. I started using at the age of 8. Maybe sooner. You know, I started buying cigarettes when there was 25 cents a pack. Wow. You know that's not yesterday. You know, and at the age of 4, I found 2 nails that fit in a plug-in, and I fucking kicked the main break off on my mom and dad's house. And I liked that, because it made me feel different. It hurt it like fuck, but it changed my feeling. You know, a lot of people in the rooms come and they say that they use drugs because it made them feel better. I did shit that made me feel worse, and I still liked it because it changed my feeling. You know, some feelings I didn't want to feel. And I learned in here that if I don't feel my feelings, I won't deal with them. If I don't deal with them, I'll never heal from them. And I had to do a lot of work when I got here. You know, this is my fourth convention this year. Last year I was coming here about 100, 150 miles from my house. My motor made a fucking squeal louder than my radio. I lowered the radio. I had a knock. Fuck. Turned around. I made about halfway back and it locked up. Called my boss. I told him my shit broke down. He said, let me see what I can do. About a month later, I didn't hear from him. I'm getting, look, Attic Man's taking over. I'm really going. The next day, my phone pings. He shows me a picture of a black car. He said, what you think? No black. Ping, a white car. What you think? I said, it looks good. My phone ring called. Come get a check. Dude, I didn't work for you since January. We in April. He said, come get a check. He said, hurry up. I got something to do. I go, he gave me a check for $28,197.28. Go to the Chevrolet garage in Broadbridge, give that to James, sign papers, and come back in your car. He bought me a 2024 Chevy Malibu with 30 miles on it. Wow. I said, so you want me to go back to work? He said, no, I didn't do that for you to come back to work. He said, I did that so you can enjoy the rest of your life. I said, thank you. He said, no, thank you. I said, the fuck, you know? I didn't give you nothing. He said, yeah. He said, you always helping people and never want nothing in return. He said, it's an honor to be able to give you something that you're going to accept. Because wow, right. I didn't know how to accept things. You know, people tell me thank you, and I say, that ain't me. It's a we. Yeah. You know, and I'm learning how to tell people thank you. You know, when they do stuff for me. And I didn't know how to accept help. And when I had to ask another grown man, which I call little kids because they're a lot younger than me, to help me, it was very awkward. You know, and I didn't want to see 50. I'm going to be 63 next month, and I'm looking forward to more. You know, my drug of choice was more. Yeah. It didn't matter what it was. Yeah. Didn't matter how you had to do it. You know, as long, and my favorite one was yours. Yeah. You know, and one promise, yeah, freedom from active addiction. I thought if I was quit using dope, I would have been free from active addiction. My first year working, writing steps, it was good. The old lady was with me. The next year, she's hitting crack in the house, and I'm at a meeting. Come back home, we fight. I found her pipe. I threw it at her. She sucked air when I hit her with it. A week later, I pulled the towel out. The same pipe falls again. I caught a hem, and I smashed it. You can't hit it. You ain't going to use that pipe no more. She jumped on my back, fucked me up. But I'm learning. You know, I'm still making mistakes, but I'm learning. The next time I found a pipe, I didn't see nothing. I put it in my pocket, I walked to the ditch, and I dropped it in the storm drain. We never fought over a pipe again. You know, I learned. You know, and it's everything in here is to learn. I'm practicing everything daily. You know, do I still fuck up? Daily. But as long as I'm doing something different, I have a chance of getting better. You know, and active addiction is between my two ears. You know, I get a good idea and I act on it. May 8th of 1978, I was swinging on a rope. The rope broke. I crushed my lumbar vertebrae, 2, 3, and 4, compression fracture. January of 81, I got slapped in the mouth with a pipe that pulled 5 teeth out of my mouth, closed both eyes, and fucked up my neck from C3 to T1. August of 82, I had a good idea. I did an 8-ball of coke and I went race my 3-wheel at a dirt bike track. I wrecked from T12 to S1's all fucking compression fracture. You know, the doctors were my favorite drug dealers because it was cheap. You know, and April 17th is going to make 14 years I didn't put a pipe in my mouth, but that's not my clean date because I was stuck on the pills and the pot. You know, because they give me 120 of these and 120 of these, and I had two old people in there where I'd buy their 120 of each. And I never got to make the money. I was smoking 2 ounces of pot a day and eating pills like fucking Skittles. My last 3 months of smoking crack, I smoked $50,000 of crack in 3 months, one to fit to kill me. and it didn't. And the more I smoked, and the more I smoked, the madder I got, the madder I got, the more I smoked. And when it didn't hit, fuck it, I quit. That's when she went to rehab. They suggested 90 meetings and 90, a meeting a day for 90 days. She didn't have a ride, so I'd bring her. My first 2 months, I went high because I didn't think this shit would have worked for me. You know, she had the problem. You know, I never went to rehab. I detoxed from opiates in the fucking rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. My people would put a straw in my fucking cup of coffee because I had to shake so bad. I had fucking coffee all over the floor. But I stayed because I was desperate. If this wouldn't have worked, I was going to kill myself. You know, that was a promise I made to my higher power on my 49th birthday. If he didn't fix something what was up there and make it better, on my 50th birthday, I was going to eat some buckshot because I figured out how to do it. I needed a little stick with a fork in it. Because, look, I spent about 3 fucking hours on my tailgate of my truck on my 49th birthday figuring out how the fuck I could pull that trigger to eat buckshot. And by the time I figured it out, something had clicked. You know, and that's when she went to rehab, started making meetings. The program suggests a meeting a day for 90 days. Look, I'm lazy. I didn't want to even count. I just made at least a meeting a day for my first 6 years. Mom fell, broke her hip, and she always made me promise I'd never stick in a nursing home. Well, they put her in a rehab / nursing home. Mom didn't hear shit about rehab. Motherfucker, you stuck me in a nursing home. 2 days later, she can't see. Mom got so mad, it bust a blood vessel in her eye, and she went fucking blind. Wow. To where now, I only can make 5 meetings a week because I got to spend 2 days cleaning Mom's house. Mm-hmm. All the pills I stole from her to get high, well, to go to sleep, because Mom likes sleeping, you know. I got 2 sisters and a brother. They call her an old bitch. Because Mom was one of us. Mom liked sleeping. Mom eat fucking sleeping pills and fuck y'all, do what y'all want. And when I wanted to come down off of dope, I went visit Mom. And every morning I got to play with her pills and put them in a little cup. Babe, what you got so many cups for? If you drop them, Mom, don't worry about it. When I come, I'll find it for you. Just make sure you take your medicine. You know, I hire a sponsee to go take care of Mom when I'm not here. When I'm not there, you know, and I was told to chase my recovery like I chased the dope. Yeah. 8 o'clock at night, if they didn't have the kind of dope I wanted where I'm from, I'm riding 240 miles to Houston going to buy some fucking dope because I'm not going to bed without dope. A lot of people said they were scratching in the morning to find that. I wasn't going to bed if I didn't have something to wake up to. Yeah. You know, and I'm grateful for the program because I don't have to try killing myself no more. You know, I help people. I try and help people. You know, I usually bring a whole crew of people with me when I come, but I wanted to come over here by myself because sometimes I need a break from people. You know, Thursday, I asked my son if he could get me some crawfish. So he sent my grandson to catch them. I told him about 10 pounds for me and Mama. Fuck, I come back with a whole sack. Called three newcomers. Said, what y'all doing? Nothing. Good. Meet me at the Beulah Rose exit. We're going to ball crawfish. And I get to do that with newcomers to show them well, you can have fun without hitting dope. You know, the one promise is many gifts. You know, and the more I give, the more I receive. You know, because if somebody would have told me I'd be up here speaking, I'd die laughing. Because look, when I first got here, I had 6 months clean. Me, my wife, and my sponsor in a fucking meeting, and I'm not saying nothing. Too many people in here for me to talk. You know, and today I'm okay with talking to people because people wouldn't have talked to me, I wouldn't be here. You know, and that's the only way I can give it back is by talking to people and trying helping people. You know, life's fucking wonderful. If I'd have known this shit would have been this good, I'd have quit a lot sooner, but my higher power knows me, you know, I'm stubborn. If I would have got here at 40 and didn't make it, I wouldn't be here right now because I'd be dead. You know, he made sure I was ready. I picked up one white key tag. You know, and I'm grateful for that one white key tag. I'm grateful for y'all because anyway, I don't know y'all. Y'all my people. I love y'all. You know, I drove to St. George, Utah by myself to go to a convention to meet my people. That was right after the pandemic because everything shut down. Let me back. I was trying to make 90 conventions in 90 months, and the pandemic hit. Fucked me up. And I didn't want to start back from one, so I just make as many as I can. You know, in St. George, it was Denison, Texas. I went to the first one after the pandemic, and I met a man over there. He said, "St. George, Utah, I went in 2 weeks." I said, "I'll see you there." I had no idea where that was. 28-hour ride by myself, listening to speaker tapes. Speaker tapes. I thank God for Rodney, because Rodney is my man. Mm-hmm. You know, because nobody wanted to ride with me for a long time, because that's all I didn't listen to fucking music. I listened to speaker tapes. Before I went to St. George, Utah, I asked a lot of the older members, what's the difference between surrender and acceptance? And I never got an answer, and they were getting me mad. On the way over there, listening to speaker tapes, that man said the only difference between surrender and acceptance is claw marks. I hit the fucking park. I pulled off the road. I rewind a motherfucker. Let me listen to that again. Claw marks. Claw marks means I'm still fighting. When I wake up in the morning, if I fucking accept the day for what it's going to be, good, bad, indifference, I'm okay. I don't have to fight today. You know, but you're still surrendering. No, I'm accepting life on life's terms. It's not going to be okay. It's already okay. In my heart, if I don't feel it's okay, it's because I didn't get my way. You know, when I feel life's not on life's terms, because I didn't get what I wanted. A lot of times what I want's not good for me. You know, I come to the conclusion, if it looks good, smells good, and tastes good, leave it alone, because it's not good for me. You know, I like me today. I love me most days, but it enables me to love other people. Yeah. And if I told you I love you and act addiction, you better hold on, because you're about to get fucked up in more ways than one. You know, and I don't hurt people no more. You know, I was hurting. I hurt a lot of people because I was hurting. You were talking about holding a door open. I didn't hold a door open in active addiction. I put my foot on the against it and watched that old lady smack the glass with her face. Made me feel good. I got her. You know. In recovery, I hold the door open. Anyway, they don't say thank you. I hold it for them when they come back. Because I owe people that. You know, I have to make amends to people that's not even fucking alive no more. I got tired burning fucking letters in the graveyard. So I do a living amends. I fucking live the way I live, not to have to go back and make amends to people. You know, 10th step, I do a 10th step all day long. An inventory that I do. And one of my friends from where I'm at, he, if you leave just a little crack in the door, that disease is going to creep back in and really fuck you up. And I thought he was fucking with me for a long time. And about 3 weeks ago, I was bringing mom to the doctor. I got a brand new car. This fucking lady comes hitting me from the back. Bam, mom almost fell out the car. Attic man took over. Look, my first thought was jump across her hood, kick her fucking door closed with her neck and her foot sticking out the door. When I got to her hood, I realized what the fuck I was thinking. And I stopped. And then the more she tried to justify the matter I got, because she was one of us. She couldn't fucking speak. She was learning her words. The sun's in my eye. Bitch, the sun's in the back of you. If the sun's in your eyes, where in the fuck you was looking? You know, like the more she... And I gotta catch myself. And I'm able to catch myself today because of the program. At one time, I flew across the hood of her car and I'd have smashed her neck and her foot in the door. You know, I got here, I didn't know how to read. I had an 8th grade education. I was more ignorant than I was illiterate. You know, I never been to prison. I used dope for 42 years and I never been to prison, but I stayed a lot in the woods. My favorite place to hang out was a graveyard. When I couldn't walk anymore, I'd crawl in a tomb and I'd sleep. And the fucking old ladies, I had a resentment against old people for a long time because they went tell the priest they saw the devil crawling out of a tomb. Where we from, a graveyard has cement tombs 3 feet sticking out the ground, and it's a cement tomb, and it was raining. I didn't get wet. You know, every graveyard has a broom. Find a broom, sweep everything to the door, and crawl to the back and sleep. And then they started closing them to where I had to find a new place to sleep when I couldn't go home. I was never homeless. I was just home a lot less. A lot of nights my truck made it home and I didn't. How that happened, I don't know. You know, I wake up, my pockets are turned inside out. I ain't got no money, I ain't got no dope. I got a wallet, but it's empty. Truck's nowhere. And And when I got to the eighth step, it says, make a list of all persons I harm. I looked at my sponsor. I said, dude, I don't remember at least 15 years of the 40 I fucking used, if not more. He said, how am I going to make a list? Because if I know in my heart, if you met me when I don't remember, I owe you an amends. You know, and he said, it's to the best of your ability. You know, and that part of living amends is me not using dope, not hurting people, is a form of, you know, and I had a fear of rejection for a long time. You know, I didn't ask women out on a date. I'd ask them if they wanted to get high. If they said, yeah, they was in trouble. You know, and it didn't matter if they was married. You could bring your husband, too, because I'll put him to sleep faster than I'll put you to sleep. You know, and that's a form of an amends. Look, I bring three women to a convention. They fight to sleep in the same bed as me, and I don't touch them. I've been single for 12 years. I haven't messed with a female in 12 years, and I'm okay with that because I'm still learning how to like me. You know, the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, I got a newcomer, a female want to go camping. I said, in a tent. I said, I'm too old to be in a tent. She said, yeah, but I got an air mattress. I'll go and I'll sleep in my car. She said, no, you're going to sleep in that air mattress with me. Little did she know, she's not getting nothing. I had two women tell me I made them feel like a cheap whore. I said, what? And that's after 6 months of not talking to them because I brought them to a convention and I didn't do nothing with them. I said, well, I told you it's about recovery before we left. And they said, yeah, but everybody says that till we get there. I said, well, I'm not everybody because what I say today is what I mean. You know, if I tell you X, Y, and Z, that's what it's going to fucking be unless I fucking die before I get there. You know, I learned how to respect women because I'm learning how to respect me. I couldn't respect people before because I didn't know how to respect myself. You know, and I take ibuprofen for my back. I don't fucking go to the doctor because, like I said, the drug dealer with a white coat, I don't fuck with them. Cholesterol medicine, yeah, I take that. I'm on three different kind of cholesterol medicine because I like sugar. I work for Sugar Cane Pharma. That's my. I buy sugar by the 5 gallon bucket. Serious, $20 a bucket. You know, everybody around my area got fucking Folgers coffee cans of fucking yellow sugar, raw sugar. You know, I'm okay with doing that today. You know, if that's my only habit is fucking sugar, I'm okay with it. You know, and I lie because my best habit is coming to conventions. You know, this one, my fourth one, and 2 weeks from now, I'm going to a camp out, then I'm going to Long Star, then we're going to do ours. I got June, I don't have nothing for June. July is going to be RBS, Recovery by the Sea, Corpus, and I get to do that. Fucking November is going to be in Illinois, great Illinois area. Last month was in Missouri, Cabin Fever. 2,500 people and I only knew five. I like that. I left with about 15 fucking numbers, people I didn't know. You know, if y'all new in here, get at least five numbers a day from people y'all don't know. And don't file them, dial them. Because that's what I was told when I got here. You know, I don't need to get a number if I'm not going to use it. You know, and little stuff like that helps keep me clean. I text at least 50 people every morning. Good morning. It fucking takes me a half hour, but I do a nebulizer treatment every morning. And it's just enough time for me to fucking text everybody good morning while I'm doing the little thing, because I hate that little thing. If I don't keep my mind occupied, I'll go crazy. You know, I sew fishnets. Yeah, I'm on my second cast net. One cast net takes me 2 miles of string with a knot tied every inch. 800 knots make a round, 150 rounds make a net. That's my morning meditation. That's my meditation. When mom gets on my fucking nerves, I go tie knots and I say the serenity prayer going home. I live about 50 feet from mom's house. I can't stay in the house with mom because thermostat set on 78 degrees. Mom's covered to the fucking neck. Ooh, baby, it's cold. I fucking take my shirt off when I walk in. I want to pull my pants down because I'm fucking smothering. I start sweating at 70. And so I bought me a little camper, and I live in the side of Mom's house. And I go check on her. Before I leave to go to work, I spend an hour with Mom. Before I leave to go to a meeting, I spend 2 hours with Mom. Most days, I'm the only face Mom sees. I got 2 sisters and a brother. I wanted to go fuck them up because they don't go visit Mom. That's out of my hands. I can't make people do what they don't want to do. You know, the only thing I can do is what I can do. You know, because for her 83rd birthday. Mom, you saw somebody today? She said, you? Attic man says, go fuck him up. I wanted to knock on my sister's door when she'd open the door, punch her in the mouth, and I'll go visit your mama. Yeah. Go to the next one, the same thing. But I'd end up in jail. You know, I can't do stuff like that today. At one time, I really didn't give a fuck where I would have ended up. You're going to go visit your mama. Black or not, you're going to visit your mama. But if you're happy being miserable today, I'm happy for you. You know, I didn't think I had a problem with drugs. I just stayed here because I was miserable as fuck. Y'all was happy. I figured I could have caught y'all using after the meeting. You know, and curiosity kept me coming back. You know, in all reality, I was miserable as fuck. I used every day for 40 years. And y'all happy because y'all using. But that's what my brain was telling me. You know, so I don't rely on it today. I don't use my brain. I don't use need ahead to make a decision today. If it don't come from the heart, it ain't going to happen. You know, but that took work. That took a lot of reading, a lot of sponsorship. First started going to meetings, I got the cops called on me twice. They said, if you're serious about your recovery, come early and stay late. I was there for 6 o'clock to make an 8 o'clock meeting. More ladies are leaving church, they leave sideways. Then while later, cops come rolling up. Suspicious character in the parking lot, I raised both hands. What you doing here? I said, I came for a meeting. He said, damn, you're early. I said, they told me if I'm serious about my recovery, come early and stay late. He said, good. Keep coming back. You know, and the priest started hanging out with me because the old ladies were scared of me. And about 2 weeks after that, I started carrying the stuff for the old ladies to their car, you know, because they got to know me. You know, and I don't blame them because I was scared of me too when I got here. You know, my hair was about long like it is, my beard about like that, and I never combed it in about 10 years. It was, you know, and, yeah, like I said, I like me today. You know, if it wouldn't be for the program, I know where I'd be. You know, relapse. Thursday, the fucking reading was about a rationalization. That fucking scares me to say the word. Because if I start rationalizing stuff, that's not good. I know where the fuck I'm going to end up. You know, because I did that a lot for 40-some years. I made nonsense make sense because that's what I wanted. I wanted it my way. You know, my first wife had gave me a choice. Her and her kids are dope. And that was a no-brainer to me. I said, you going to pack? And she told me no. Out of resentment against her for the next 20 years. And I really hated this lady because she told me no because she was a lazy bitch. Going over the steps with my sponsor, I told him that, and his sponsor said, so do you really think it's because she's lazy or because she didn't want you to go? I threw all my shit down, I puffed up my little chest, I said, motherfucker, you taking up for her? He said, no, because I never taught her the part she didn't want me to go. You know, I had to take it. No, he said, I'm just giving you something to think about. And I thought about it for a long time, and 9 out of 10 is because she didn't want me to fucking leave. You know, and fuck, that was a no-brainer. I got to go. You and the kids are the dope. Fuck, the dope. You know, and I showed her. I went right in the hood. I picked one up working the corner. Stayed with her for about 9 months. The police came get her for aggravated battery. She had stabbed her ex. 27 days out of the penitentiary, I married her. The fuck could go wrong? What could go wrong? She's just like me, fucked up. 6 months later, I hated her. I hated me because she was just like me. And, you know, that's what, yeah. And I don't hate people today. My first wife, what I showed a lesson to, I could drink coffee with her now. You know, because I can do that. I remodeled her house. Because it was a little two-room house, and they added on. But the first 2 rooms they added on was all rotten. I cut a hole in the floor. I stuck some wood from the ground to the floor. I tore everything out, floor, walls, everything, and I rebuilt that. How much owe you? I said, nothing. I said, I should have did that before I left you. So my son calls me about a week later. Daddy, come see that thing you put in. I said, I didn't fuck that up. I'm telling you, it's not. So I get there, he gives me a fucking box with a rifle on it. I said, damn, Dick, you bought another gun? He said, no, I bought that for you. I said, I told you I didn't want nothing. He said, no, dude, you told me you didn't want no money. I said, you little motherfucker, you. Because I still wasn't able to accept gifts from other people yet. You know, and I'm learning, and I told it to my sponsor. He said, well, you need to go back and tell him thank you. So I had to go back and fucking tell him thank you. You know, anything somebody does for you to help you, tell them thank you. Take it and tell them thank you. I said, yeah. He said, take it and tell them thank you. My first sponsor had 8 years clean. He left. He relapsed. But I didn't know why, but it hurt. So I found me another sponsor, and then I found out he had stage 4 lung cancer. So he wanted to go out with a bang, I guess. And a week before he died, I went to visit him. I picked him up. I brought him right around his hometown. I went right in all the hoods where white people ain't allowed. You know, but I didn't give a fuck. That's my sponsor. I loved him. If he wanted to go ride, check out his hometown area, I brought him. I was able to go to his funeral. All his kids called me Uncle Terry. You know, and that's the gifts of the program. You know, people respect me. I respect me. You know, when I got here, I didn't fucking respect myself. I didn't expect nobody else to. You know, I work for the people I work for 20 years using, and I got 13 years clean with them. They treat me like I walk on water. Because, yeah, you know, I'm always there because I was taught at a young age work's the most important thing. That's why I never learned how to read, because I didn't need to know how to read and write. I just needed to know arithmetic so I didn't get fucked on my hours or my check. You know, and work, you know, like I said, my last 3 months of using, I smoked $50,000 of fucking crack in 3 months because I wanted it to kill me. And it didn't. And that's when I threw the pipe away. You know, and I just couldn't do that no more. You know, and being here with y'all is fucking amazing. This is my first one, but it won't be the last one. You know, and yeah, I love y'all. You know, and that's, I love y'all, and there ain't nothing y'all can do about it. You know, and yeah, if y'all new, give yourself a chance. Look, we got a saying in our home group, they ain't got many little kids. But newcomers, give the newcomers a chance, keep your dick in your pants. That's what I was told in my first week when I got there. Give the newcomers a chance, keep your dick in your pants. What the fuck you talking about? You know, and yeah. It didn't make sense at the time, but it makes a whole lot of sense now. You know, and I'm starting with the so that's all I have. My name's Terry, and I'm an addict.
Nathan, I'm an addict. Thank you to John and Terry for the message. And I was taking a moment of silence, followed up with the weed version of the